Big welcome to the Heritage Council podcast, and a theme that we are embracing for this series in 2021 is inclusive heritage. This will involve a broad overview of the multi-layered experiences which encompass Ireland's past, and will also put into context how this sense of heritage is all about our collective experience, and why so much of what went before still resonates in the present. I hope you enjoy the show. Ireland's youth are increasingly sounding the alarm about climate change, and many want to be at the vanguard of social and environmental change. But what has sparked this growing level of environmental awareness in the younger generation? In today's podcast, we speak with three third-level environmental activists who are playing a central role in an ambitious campaign to eliminate the sale and use of single-use plastics on the campus of Trinity College Dublin. They speak about the various initiatives introduced to achieve this goal, some of the challenges they faced along the way, and how change can actually be achieved. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with these three young, inspirational women. On the Heritage Council podcast today, I've got three very special guests, and I'm going to ask each of them to introduce themselves, if that's okay. You're all from Trinity College Dublin, and I'm going to start with Becca Paling. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you, Greg.
So what you might do is tell the listener who you are, what you're studying, and your role on this conversation today.
I'm Becca, and today I'm going to be talking about youth and climate with Katie and Caroline. I'm currently studying geoscience in Trinity, and currently I have a role in the Trinity EnviroSoc Committee as the Green Campus Coordinator, and this provides the intersection between students and society, as well as the staff, to kind of implement change with the college. And I was also on a committee last year as well.
Yeah, and that role as campaign coordinator, what does that look like? What do you end up doing?
So it's kind of just almost like a normal committee role, in the way that you'll still organize events within the society. Like Katie and I organized for Green Week climate and inequalities event, where we had about 10 speakers in. But we also had conversations with the Green Campus committee about how this could be done, and their input on that as well. And I guess kind of promoting ways that students can make change on campus, but with the feedback from the staff as well.
Okay, thanks a million. And now we have Katie Smirnova. How are you, Katie?
Hi, Greg. Great, how are you? Just to follow on from what Becca was saying about EnviroSoc, I'm chairperson of the committee this year, and last year I was secretary, and I've also been involved at Green Campus actively over the past few years. So the link between the two is something that I've really noticed. There's often overlap in the sort of people that are involved and the sort of projects that we're working on. But in terms of differentiating between EnviroSoc and Green Campus, I would say EnviroSoc is more involved in organizing student engagement events. So we regularly interact with students from all faculties and all departments in Trinity, whereas Green Campus is less focused on event organization and more on creating change within departments. So organizing projects that will kind of transform the way lecturers teach, or creating changes in labs, that sort of thing. So they're more project focused, whereas EnviroSoc is more event focused.
Yeah, and events are a really good vehicle for creating awareness, aren't they?
Exactly. That's why the two complement each other so well, and why EnviroSoc feels that the Green Campus Coordinator role is so important, because we need to promote projects that are happening in Green Campus, and Green Campus can promote events that are happening within EnviroSoc, and it just balances out really well.
And what are you studying?
I'm studying environmental science. I'm in my final year this year. I've been really interested in climate activism extracurricularly, but environmentalism is just much more broad than that. And in terms of career focus, I'd be more kind of interested in conservation and wildlife biology, and engaging communities in conservation projects worldwide. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of interests.
And those interests, Katie, where did they come from?
I went into Trinity knowing I wanted to do environmental science. And then in first year, I got to know TCD Plastic Solutions through two girls that I met through the Climate Ambassador Programme with Antoshka. And that's kind of where it all kicked off. I started off with environmental work off campus with the Climate Ambassador Program, and then got into TCD Plastic Solutions, and then got involved in Green Campus and EnviroSoc, and everything just snowballed.
Yeah, and that interest in the environment, day one for you, what stirred that? What did it come from, your parents? Is that your own interest, or how did that happen?
I don't know what it was like for you girls, but like, I don't think there was a flashlight moment for me. I think it just started off with me reading like random articles in fifth and sixth year. Like up until fifth year, I was dead set on being a vet for years and years. And I was doing work experience in it, and had done interviews in it, and like mock interviews in fifth year. So the whole environmental thing, I think, just started off from animal welfare kind of interests, and then broadened out into like climate and plastic pollution and all of those issues.
Okay, thanks, Amayan. Yeah, and I would like to welcome Caroline Costello. How are you, Caroline?
Very well. Thank you for having me, Greg. Just to introduce myself as well, I'm a bit different from Katie and Becca in that I study history of art and architecture. So it's kind of a complete random subject for me to get into, I guess, environmentalism stuff. But I'm a second year student. And last year when I was in first year, I got kind of interested in TCD Plastic Solutions through Katie. I reached out to her and just kind of said I wanted to get involved, and I was willing to do whatever she needed me to do. And that's where I still am because of that. So that kind of changed into EnviroLend, which is the lending crockery and cutlery scheme, which is now a part of the Green Campus Committee's subcommittee, the Waste Subcommittee, which is a bit of a mouthful. But yeah, so that's just where I'm at.
And with all three of you in your own heads, do you feel that you're trying to change things on campus? Or is the work that you're doing and the access that you have to all of those students going to change their opinions and influence how they are going forward?
Well, I mean, that kind of always is a little bit of a danger, especially within environmental science society, that you're always preaching to the crowd, so that the people who kind of joined already, they would already be interested in environmental issues. But we have kind of recently been trying to get a broader outreach of students by talking to other societies, doing events with them. So I guess students that wouldn't originally think of certain things to do with the environment may link it to other things that they're interested in, like maybe like music or just law or something. And then they get to explore that perspective of it, which I think has kind of gained interest this year, especially with people not having that much to do with college being online and seeing what's up here. But I guess the work within environmental society would be predominantly kind of towards changing student perceptions on campus. But it is quite good already, because I think people are really starting to see the influence of environmental degradation and climate change in general, and kind of the poor-ish performance of Ireland towards it. So I think, yeah, it's kind of getting students more interested, I think, from kind of my perspective.
And the environmental society is so great in that it promotes groups who are taking project actions and like doing work on the ground. So Plastic Solutions, it was to a large extent to raise awareness around plastic pollution around the world. But at the end of the day, the goal was to make Trinity plastic free. That was the goal. And that was the campaign strategy, was, yeah, we're doing a petition, but it's not just to get people to sign a petition, it's to get Trinity College to change the way it works. So like, students have had a long history of actually getting change on campus implemented, starting with the fossil fuel divestment campaign in the years previous to 2017. And then it's still ongoing with Green Campus.
Okay. Could you talk to me, Katie, about that petition back in 2018? I think that was the big start for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's in like third or fourth year in Trinity, particularly Kez and Katrina, and they came up with this great idea of making Trinity plastic free. And like, that's a really big thought, like it's a big goal, and it's really hard to do in such like a well-established college. So they started just with that petition. We're sharing it around group chats, going into lectures, talking directly to students, asking lecturers to give them some time to like get their word across. They're organizing giveaways and really active on social media, and just getting students in for weekly meetings to like kind of like a think tank, asking them, how do you think we can promote this better? So then in a few months, they had thousands of signatures and presented it to the provost on Green Week 2018. And after that, the college committed to removing unnecessary single-use plastics from like its operation. So that excludes things like laboratories, but includes catering and other non-essentials, like in the library, for example, where there's some swaps that can be made quite easily. Yeah, and since then, catering has moved over to compostable containers for its takeaways. So at least they're compostable. So the issue there is that whether they end up in a compost bin or not, but in terms of like making a change, it's still a good first step. And they supported TC Plastic Solutions in Environment campaign and are currently moving over to a Green Labs program as well, which will sign up different laboratories around Trinity and get them to make changes in their own labs.
Yeah, I love the simplicity of your objective, the TCD Plastic Solutions. And I just got this off the petition site. And we see eliminate the sale and use of single-use plastics on Trinity College Dublin campus. And there's plastics everywhere. And what you're really doing is trying to change how so many different things work. And I know there's cutlery, cups, bottles, plates, packaging. And of course, people are moving really, really fast going about their business. So convenience, I guess, was the reason why an awful lot of things happen. From your opinions in approaching that work, and it's an easy thing to pop your name in a petition. I think it was 5,984 signatures you got, which was like 17% or something. That was huge. Where are the big difficulties in actually making all that stuff happen?
The main difficulties were in the procurement stage. So a lot of the plastics that Trinity signed up to sell are sold by companies who we have contracts with that are usually extended up to 5 years. So although the provost, for example, might want to remove the sale of water bottles on campus, their contract with Coca-Cola may prevent them from doing so in a time frame that like suits the petition and what they ask for. Another problem with Trinity Plastic Free Trinity was conversations we had around Trinity Ball. So there was like a lot of momentum there from the college and there was a desire there for change. But the issue was Trinity don't necessarily do all the organizing for that. It's done primarily through MCD and Heineken, who are the suppliers to the event. And even if Trinity want to go plastic free, unless Heineken and MCD have the capacity to do that, it's not going to happen. So it's not so much barriers within Trinity, but more so barriers external to Trinity that operate within the college.
Yeah, but when you look at procurement and the procurement rules, you know, the minute you introduce those things, that's amazing how, in particular in the commercial world, how solutions can be found very quickly when you have to find them. Yeah, we're in exactly the same ballgame with our offices because a lot of the changes that we need to make to be more environmentally friendly is down to the landlord and him making decisions about heating and lighting and water use and everything else, many things that we're not in control of. But if it became a condition all of a sudden, so obviously there's knowledge, there's attitude, there's availability of products, there's budget issues in terms of tackling all of those things. And you mentioned already procurement and practicalities. Were you achieving change?
Maybe Caroline, if you want to touch on Environland and like what the Waste Subcommittee is working on.
Yeah, so I guess the Waste Subcommittee is almost like a branch that came out of that. Like we have taken over then Environland essentially. So that will be our responsibility to try to continue having the option for societies and clubs to be able to rent crockery and cutlery so they can avoid the single-use plastic. So Katie was saying that they had to apply for a fund first. So that's how we got the first small amount. And it's all like metal bowls and cups because we thought they'd be a bit more durable just for students using them at different events. But then it's up to the societies themselves to take care of them, clean them, and then give them back to us. And we have a storage space with UPS on campus for that. But then as well, we're doing our best to try to encourage kind of other ways to just make students aware of like things like waste and their plastic consumption. So over Green Week, we had a tutorial on EcoBricks. So EcoBricks is where you have plastic bottles and you just basically stuff them up with like all your non-recyclable plastics. And then we had someone from Seal Rescue Ireland. Her name was Kristen Meyer. She was the education manager, and she was talking about how they kind of started that themselves because they wanted to raise awareness on the impact of plastic waste on obviously seals and other wildlife. And so we were trying to just tie in a few aspects into like plastic waste. So, you know, touching on students' heartstrings, hopefully, to be like, this is how it's affected, you know, our wildlife around Ireland, but also this is how much plastic you consume, because you can really see that when you're putting it into a plastic bottle. Oh my God, this is how much I just have in a week. And it's just from a few packets of like crisps, a chocolate bar here and there. But like, you know, we also were trying to say it's not completely your fault, because obviously it's up to companies as well to stop producing all this plastic. But yeah, so basically we're just trying to make people aware of just what's going on, just to open their eyes. And I think that's maybe even a first step for students to get involved.
I love what you're saying there, Caroline, about you need to get the student to awaken about all of these things in the first place. But then the things that are practical within campus need to be in place for them to see through that agenda, or whatever. Because it's even worse when you think, yeah, fantastic, I'd love to pursue this agenda because I understand and I believe it's better for the environment. But then when you can't exercise that in practical ways, it kind of falls apart. Then you start saying, well, there's no point in me doing this. So, you know, what can I do if I go to the vending machine and it's all just, you know, plastic bottles and everything else? Because you did a few practical things. And I love the idea of EnviroLend.
EnviroLend, yeah.
Basically, what you were saying was, okay, there's a problem. We want to solve it. There's no solution. So let's create the solution. And I know the plastic-free Trinity Bowl was an objective. And of course, it didn't happen with COVID and everything. But were you able to progress that in any way? Like if it happened, could you have pulled off a plastic-free Trinity Bowl? Were you nearly there, or was that becoming too difficult?
We were having meetings with MCD. We had one, and then we were going to keep the discussion going, and then COVID happened, so there was no kind of issue, like point for us almost in the near future. But there was goal set, and Trinity, particularly Michelle Hallahan, the Provost Sustainability Advisor, was very active in making sure that this is something that Trinity wants, that the Provost wants, that the students want, and at the end of the day, we're paying MCD and Heineken to organise this for us. It's a Trinity run event, and we're not going to kind of just give in to like saying, yeah, it's not feasible. So originally we found a supplier for reusable cups, EnviroCup, who we used for plastic solutions then for the EnviroLand scheme. We created a proposal. We brought it to the contractors and said, look, this is a plan. Are you happy to go through with this plan? Then MCD came back to us and said, look, we are working on our own reusable cup scheme with Heineken that's currently in development, because it's something that companies are working on for festivals in general. And like it was currently in development. So they said, we won't use external suppliers. We'll use our own kind of system of doing it. And that it may not be in operation by 2020, but that in coming years, we'll hopefully have it up and running and able to be used for Trinity Ball. So that's kind of state of the project kind of there. because it is something that Heineken have done in the past on a smaller scale. They've used reusable cups at smaller festivals. So it's a matter of scaling that up, making it suitable for a crowd of 5,000 students who are not in the capacity to necessarily understand that they need to bring their cup back to get their 50 cents.
And commercial people will make things happen. If it becomes a condition, if that's the difference between getting the gig or the event or the initiative and not getting it, they will find solutions.
Yeah.
And that's when you really need the absolute support of the organization if you want to push anything through like that. Yeah. Your experience with the students and, you know, getting them to sign up for the petition is fine. Yeah, you know, brilliant. We all want a better environment. It's not a hardship to press a button on a screen. Going beyond that and really getting their attention, how would you describe that journey? How about you, Becca?
Yeah, like you say, it can be very difficult to go beyond that, because obviously people think, oh yeah, all I have to do is, you know, write my name on something, or like a Greenpeace, or even, yeah, like the plastic solutions. But I guess from my perspective, if you just kind of demonstrate to people how easy it is to implement certain change, and even like give them the resources of how to do that, like kind of almost like baby step them, then it's kind of less effort on their part, but they're still a little bit motivated of how to do it, because you know, like climate change, it's seen as such a big problem. People think, oh, I can't do anything. But if you honestly just show, like literally give it to them, like for example, what was been happening on social media today, I think Katie shared a link of like the Taking Root film, rather than just saying, oh yes, it was Wangari Maathai Day yesterday, just watch the film, you know, giving them the link so they can then do their own research and then see how this amazing woman kind of helped plant a whole load of trees and transform Kenya, you know.
Because we're moving in such a fast-paced world, attention spans have gone to nothing. So you need to really communicate as easy and as quickly as you can. Are you hopeful around that, you know, from the work you've done? And I know you've been pretty much at it since 2017. Are changes coming? And one thing, I guess, the structural changes to allow this to happen. But the second part is that the students are switching on around all of this. How about you, Caroline?
Yeah, I think it is going to make a difference. I think generally, I don't know, maybe this is just my opinion, but our generation definitely has more of a grasp on environmental problems and they're definitely aware of them. So it's a matter of just getting people to want to join in or not feel excluded. It's just like bringing down those barriers. So even like us just trying to do things like tutorials, having them online so people can go and watch them whenever, like we're hoping even with those eco bricks that we can set up an initiative on campus where students can bring in the eco bricks, and then we'd love basically to have it as a form of voucher, so maybe they could get like a drink from the pavilion bar in exchange for that eco brick, and then we can in turn use them for like an arts festival because you're able to make like furniture and garden walls for them. But then also there's two students, Laura Brennan and Laura Parker, who've recently set up an app called EthiCart. So they did that through Trinity, and they're basically using student ambassadors to promote it. And the app itself, you can scan products to see how sustainable they are, like while you're doing your shopping, and it says if the packaging is sustainable, where it's come from, who's making it. And all these students are kind of getting involved, even downloading that app, using it, sharing it, and they have like a Meatless Monday scheme going on where they're trying to get people to post on Instagram stories to not eat meat every Monday, and then they also share recipes to encourage that. So it's like, oh look, my dinner was so good this Monday, you can get the recipe here, it's in, you know, the highlights bar of the Instagram account. So it's just like all these little things, like Becca was saying, like actually just giving the resources to students, and then they're going to gradually keep getting more and more involved, and it's going to be more subconscious, I think. Then
even in terms of Green Campus membership, when I started in 2018, 2019, there was maybe on average 10 people involved and attendance would be sparse. But this year, maybe because it's online, but even in previous years when it was in person still, we've had on average like up to 30 people at our weekly meetings in the run up to Green Week. And then we'd have monthly meetings, and with the Waste Subcommittee and other subcommittees and communications and water, we've gotten almost 100 people involved in those separately to the original Green Campus. During Green Week this week, last week, we had over 100 people at our Climate Inequalities event, an event on rewilding organized by the Biodiversity Subcommittee, and the Zoological Society had over 100 people at it as well. The climate hustings run with the Provost candidates had over 500 people attending. And there were so many other events during the week that had dozens of people at them and interacting and engaging. And so if you were talking about benefits of COVID previously, if anything, it's made it so much easier to engage with environmentalism on campus. It's just really accessible now.
Okay, and I'm glad you brought up COVID, and it proves we can change. You know, the thought of getting every person in Ireland who's going shopping to wear a mask and things like that. If we spoke about that a year ago, we all would have been saying, not a chance. You know, people aren't going to make changes like that. But of course, we're all quite capable of change. So while we're talking about COVID and some of the benefits of it from an environmental point of view, could you talk to me about that from your point of view and what you see happening, and maybe how we can grab onto some of those good things going into the future and take some positive out of this awful time?
Well, I mean, even just kind of looking around and seeing it on even on YouTube and stuff, like all the kind of almost like wildlife has almost returned because there's not all this traffic anymore. And basically animals kind of get more of a free run without humans kind of being around and stuff. Basically everything seems to be booming at the moment. Like when I've cycled home at night a few times, like I've seen like multiple foxes in just 10 minutes, and that would have never happened before pre-COVID. And I guess even just the little things like Earth Overshoot Day was the 22nd of August this year, and usually it would be July. So that's the time when the planet uses more resources than it can basically replenish. So although we've still got a long way to go, like that, like you say, like there has been benefits, and they're not exactly too much touched upon. And I guess when people really start to see that, then I guess in their own little way they could then take a part of that and see, okay, oh, there's less plastic this year, or there's less emissions, or there's more wildlife, and then kind of bring it forward and inspire them to do something about it.
Yeah. And how about you, Katie? And maybe on top of that, we were having this conversation earlier, why the environmental benefits haven't been highlighted a little bit more at this time?
It, kind of touching on what Becca was saying before, that so doom and gloom that it's almost kind of difficult for like media to touch upon the benefits. You described it so eloquently, Becca, so I'll maybe bring it back to you to say what you're describing about like ecofascism and the point that you made on that.
Well, I think it could also be a little bit extreme, but there's some groups that kind of talk about COVID and people dying and stuff as, oh yes, this is great for the environment because of all the emissions dropped. So I think the media is maybe a little bit aware of that and not wanting to catch on, because it's very much like a political thing too, even though it really shouldn't be. And yeah, like you're saying, Greg, like definitely the benefits are really not highlighted, and they kind of need to be, so people are more aware of them.
And what we've heard a lot at events being said is that, if anything, COVID has shown us that it's possible to make dramatic change at the click of a button. The government has the capacity to do this and to implement policies and legislation really rapidly. And like COVID was a really dramatic example of that. And if anything, we need environmental legislation and protection for biodiversity brought in just as fast and just as like dramatically, because it's such an urgent crisis. And as it has been covered in the media to some extent, there's such a link between zoonotic diseases and pandemics. So like creating those links and making the government see that protecting our biodiversity and the biodiversity in hotspots around the world, in rainforests and oceanic islands, that's all a part of protecting our future economies as well. They're not exclusive.
We changed as a society because change was forced upon us. But we'd be silly not to observe the effects of the change and some of the benefits. And, you know, maybe it would be a good thing to talk about them and acknowledge them. And maybe, yeah, if we hold on to some of those changes, maybe our world could be a better place. How about you, Caroline?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think it's important to always kind of find that good in the bad. Like I know, I don't know if you know Roz Purcell, who's kind of a big Irish star, and she's always sharing like the good news accounts on Instagram, because she knows obviously everyone is pretty down about COVID, but there's like all these good news stories that are happening at the same time. So whether it's to do with individuals or on a bigger scale, sorry, in terms of climate, like it's really just highlighting there's actually some positives that are still going on, and we really need to push those still, because it is a good thing, and we need to ensure that those kind of keep happening after COVID and we're not going back to beforehand where they weren't in place. We're keeping them up, you know.
So within your own planning in Trinity, are there any specific things you'll be working hard to hold on to?
Something that we've been kind of talking a lot in Borisoc anyway recently, and a conversation that's been happening in the outdoor spaces in general, has been about like diversity and integrating different backgrounds into environmentalism. It's something that's really prevalent in all environmental groups, is that it's not that it's the most welcoming space, but it's definitely not the most well-represented space. So I think that that's a really important conversation we need to have across Ireland. and particularly amongst the student body, because you need to just ask ourselves, why is that? Why don't we see Black women and people of colour in environmental groups and across committees, particularly in EnviroSoc? Our membership is great and we're really grateful for everyone who gets involved, but we're always seeing the same people and it's something that really needs to change. I don't know what you girls think about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think we try to push that as well with our climate and inequalities event, kind of showing that it's not just all about academics talking about, oh, let's save like the trees and stuff. It's all these people from a wide range of backgrounds and highlighting their perspectives and experiences with climate change, but also kind of celebrating nature and the climate through, like, we were kind of had a focus on the arts, so it would be through music, poetry, and it was actually really special. And I think just, yeah, highlighting to people that there's so much more than that, and even just collaboration with other societies to get them involved as well, I think is something that, yeah, we'll definitely want to do more of in the future, because it was really great and we got a great reception from it as well.
And your use of social media to reach out to other students and other young people to get them on board with your agenda, is that an easy thing, or do you end up being painted as, you know, the environmental weirdos? Do you end up taking a bit of flack or a bit of abuse because you're pro-environment, or do doors open for you and welcome, come on in?
I think maybe it's a little bit of both. Like, even, you know, on your personal accounts, you kind of try to share what's going on within Trinity. You try to share all the events and, you know, you're trying to share your own maybe subcommittees, like events that are going on as well. And you're like, look, this is so cool. But then you realize you're kind of bombarding a lot of messages that are all around the same theme and people aren't really looking at the exact details of what's going on. But then there's also some people that reach out that are like, that is so interesting, I didn't know that was happening. Like, if you hadn't shared that on your story, I would not have gone to that Zoom call, you know. So, like, I think social media is kind of the only way forward, especially with COVID, to just get that message around to students, because that's the only thing we're on at the moment. It's the only way we can socialize, and I think that might even kind of continue even more so after COVID. As much as we want to be doing stuff in person, we're going to have to keep sharing everything that's going on constantly on social media.
I'd say it's always definitely open doors to anyone interested in the environment, definitely from other societies. Like, with sustainable fashion being such a hot topic right now and environmental issues linking into every kind of aspect of society, if anything, being an environmentalist has become really trendy. So it's you're less so seen as the weird hippie who plays guitar. And now even people who aren't involved in EnviroSoc will find people interested in the environment in any society that we go into. And it is particularly during Green Week and throughout the year, we see a lot of societies organizing events and bringing in speakers on the theme of the environment without being involved with us directly. So it's environmental events are so much more than EnviroSoc, in Trinity at least.
How about you, Becca?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were just kind of talking about it a few weeks ago on committee, like the EnviroSoc page has actually like really, really boomed this year. And I guess people are just wanting to engage with it more. Like, I'm not completely involved with that social media page as such. Like, Katie and Caroline have more experience with that. But definitely, I don't think we've had any bad comments and stuff. Which is great, but yeah, people are getting more on board.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm going to leave the last word to each of you, if that's okay. And maybe in the context of the remainder of your time in TCD and what you want to do with it and how you're going to bring that forward. Maybe you, Caroline.
I don't know. Yeah, just only in second year. So I'm hoping there'll be a few things I can get done. But even one thing we're hoping to continue is the TerraCycle program. So we already have that in place in the college, where basically TerraCycle is a company that recycles non-recyclable waste. So we have it in the libraries for the gloves, but we'd love to get it for other things. Like, there's special kinds of sweet wrappers that just can't be recycled. And we just think if that was on campus, that'd be such an easy way for students to throw that away without any, you know, any work, any additional thought. And they even have ones where you can recycle like shampoo and conditioner bottles, because they also are really hard to recycle. So we'd love to get that onto like Trinity Halls and all the accommodation places. So that's something we're kind of just beginning to work on, and we're hoping that will be in place at some point soon.
How about you, Katie?
I think a conversation that's been happening a lot between staff members recently has been around a sustainability office, a joint office of sustainability and civic responsibility. So joining the social kind of issues and environmental issues side by side and creating a space for that to be funded more broadly than it has been to date. The Sustainability Fund is a great start and it's launched many incredible projects around campus. But all in all, there is a very big lack of funding for really comprehensive staff-led, Trinity-led projects. So that's a big move that we hope will happen when the new provost is elected at the end of this spring. So that's just a big step. What that office will include is basically hiring more people to work on environmental issues in Trinity, on sustainability. So at the minute, Michelle Hallahan, the sustainability advisor, is the only staff member who is paid to work exclusively on environmental issues. And she works part-time and is involved with the climate action plan, the sustainability plan, creating those goals and targets, monitoring them year on year, being involved with the Green Campus, interacting with students, attending regular meetings with departments from catering to labs to estates and facilities. It's a lot of work for one person. And what will really help progress that in Trinity is moving away from entirely student-led initiatives and kind of co-opting student activity as the main way to get change to happen and making that staff-led. And the Sustainability Office is something that will really help progress that along.
Yeah, so that's a simple message really, Katie, isn't it? Resource the agenda and we'll really make progress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Cool. And how about you, Becca?
I think just from an environmental perspective, like we've seen how well engaging with other students from outside the society and kind of getting them involved in that has worked. So I guess continuing that, I hope to continue to be involved with environmental society. And as well with Green Campus, the way it has kind of literally boomed this year, especially with the creation of the subcommittees and the fact that, yeah, like as Katie said, it used to be sort of a table of 10 people sitting awkwardly around a table on 1 to 2 p.m. on a Thursday. But now it's kind of all created loads of conversations and, yeah, I guess essentially creating more of a bridge between the environmental and the Green Campus.
Well, it sounds like the three of you and all of the people on those committees and subcommittees are making a big difference, both on campus and maybe changing people's minds, and that'll travel with them wherever they go, be it into their professional lives or even at home. So a huge thank you to Becca, Katie and Caroline for coming on the Heritage Council podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you for listening to the Heritage Council podcast. For more information about our projects and programs, our work with others and our publications, please check our website, heritagecouncil.ie. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram or LinkedIn, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. See you again soon.